I repeat, Napoleon had the habit, sought it, determined to have it. And when it was uncovered at Nuremberg, old General Patton became enraged that those that were its custodians could not give him quickly an accurate history of it. He's probably the only American general that knew of its significance, that old believer in reincarnation. Hitler had to possess this spear, because the mystique of it said that whomever had it held the destiny of the world in his hands. The holder of this spear would rule the world. They believed that. Now, it took old grinning loony Eisenhower to ship it back from Nuremberg to Austria. It was in the United States' hands for a very short time. During that very short time, we dropped the atom bombs on Japan. It took Eisenhower to ship it back to Austria. The spear is now under the dominion of communist Eastern Russia. Now, let me tell you about this spear. You think this spear had any possible connection at all with what's going on in Holy Blood, Holy Grail? We'll see, won't we? Hitler, Adolf Hitler, had failed to gain entry into the Vienna Academy of Fine Arts because his sketches were not up to the required standard. And the School of Architecture had also refused him through lack of qualification. Unwilling to take a job, he was eking out a starveling existence on his dead mother's savings. Now, you may say, what's this got to do with the Bermuda Triangle? Nothing. He was eking out a starveling existence on his dead mother's savings, which were almost spent, and on a diminutive orphan's pension granted in respect of his father's service in the customs department, now shortly to be stopped. Thrown back on his own devices and unable to make friends, Hitler became day by day a more solitary and embittered figure. His disappointment had... How old was he? This is 4 years after a recorded experience when he was 15, so he's 19. 19 years old. Thrown back on his own devices and unable to make friends, Hitler became day by day a more solitary and embittered figure. And the subject's the spear of destiny. Longinus, as he came to be known, had pierced the side of Jesus. And this became a relic, that spear that pierced the side of Jesus, to which many legends attached. But more importantly, the great rulers of the last 2,000 years in Europe have believed the legend that whomever held this spear had the source and access to power to rule the world. Hitler hadn't seen it. Thrown back on his own devices, 19, unable to make friends, Hitler became day by day a more solitary and embittered figure. His disappointment had been made yet more acute by Gustl Kubizek's astonishing success at the Music Conservatory. Now, Gustl Kubizek was a young friend of Adolf Hitler in those teen years. They shared a bug-ridden little flat in Vienna. And in his book, Young Hitler, The Story of Our Friendship, I'm reading from The Spear of Destiny by Trevor Ravenscroft, August Kubizek recorded a scene with Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler stood in front of me, gripped my hands, and held them tight. He was only 15 at the time. He had never made such a gesture before. I felt from his grasp how deeply he was moved. His eyes were feverish with excitement. The words did not come smoothly from his mouth as they usually did, but rather erupted, hoarse and raucous. You ever heard a demon talk? Never before. I got to get to demonology. Never before and never again have I heard Adolf Hitler speak as he did in that hour. This is Kubizek talking. I was struck by something strange which I'd never noticed before. Even when he talked to me in moments of greatest excitement, it was as if another being spoke out of his body and moved him as much as it did me. It was not all a case of a speaker carried away by his own words. On the contrary, I rather felt as though he himself listened with astonishment and emotion to what burst forth from him with elemental force. Like floodwaters breaking their dikes, his words burst from him. He conjured up in grandiose, inspiring pictures his own future and that of his people. He was talking of a mandate which one day he would receive from the people to lead them from servitude to the heights of freedom, a special mission that would one day be entrusted to him. Now, 4 years later, failing to gain entry to the Vienna Academy after having made such a speech to his friend, rejected by the School of Architecture, unwilling to take a job, eking out a small living, he became solitary and embittered, made more acute by the success of Kubizek at the Music Conservatory. Yet, despite his lack of prospects, he impelled himself into self-directed studies with a grim determination. Nobody could rightly accuse him of idleness that year, though many believed his efforts were along misguided lines. Many hours were spent every day in the Hof Library, studying Nordic and Teutonic mythology and folklore. You see, many, many historians have no concept of Adolf Hitler's involvement with the occult. I have talked over and over again. The book of Daniel makes it clear that a demon prince was the real ruler of the Persian Empire. And when that angel that came to Daniel would return, he and Michael would defeat that prince, and lo, the prince of Grecia would come. Alexander the Great was demon-possessed, the source of his great power. You follow him if you study the life of Alexander the Great in his visits to the oracles, and you will again find the man committed to seeking out supernatural sources. When he died, the book of Daniel says, his kingdom was given, though it was in prophecy as the horn that was broken off early, and in his place, the four generals came up, but not in his power. Antichrist will come on the scene in the book of Revelation, the last world ruler. He will come up with a peace plan. He will start out not all evil. That's the fallacy of the movie Omen. Antichrist does not necessarily start out with any supernatural abilities. He will uproot two of the kings or kingdoms of the reconstituted ten-toed kingdom, ten-horned kingdom. He will be given rulership by the remaining kings. He'll make a pact with Israel, and then the beast out of the bottomless pit, none other than the demon that had possessed Alexander the Great, will possess him. People wonder, the source of power in some of these evil men. Napoleon went into the king's chamber in the pyramid, came out ashen-faced. He had an experience in the king's chamber. They sought and besought him to tell him what it was. Once on the island of his banishment, he almost told a friend, and then he backed off. But he went from that entry into the king's chamber to his defeat. Everything started going downhill for Napoleon. Now, some have said he met a demon. I say, If he'd met a demon that had promised him great things, he'd have come out glowing, not ashen-faced. He had somebody announce to him that his ambitions to restore an empire like Alexander's was not to be accomplished. And from there to the Holy Land, to meet his defeated Acre, and it's downhill ever since, or thereafter. And once again, we're going to see a world ruler immersing himself in Nordic and Teutonic mythology and folklore and reading broadly in German history, literature, and philosophy. This is the truth in the movie The Raiders of the Lost Ark. Hitler's passion for religious relics. Hitler's main efforts at this time were still concentrated on architecture. He drew up plans for a number of ambitious building projects that would never have the least chance of materializing. During the long summer vacation when Kubizek was back home in Linz, he began to worry about his friend, living all alone in a state of perpetual hunger in the tiny, ill-appointed room. He persuaded his mother to send him food parcels. Kubizek was to go on wondering what Hitler was doing for a long time. He didn't see his friend again until 24 years later he had become the undisputed Führer of the Third Reich. For while Kubizek was away on holiday that summer, Hitler made an important discovery, a discovery that was to change his whole way of life and set him off on the lonely road to total power. People that are not willing to accept the supernatural dimension of life will always give you a diluted and watered-down record of history. It was while he was working on his drawings outside the Hofburg Museum that Hitler's spirits reached their lowest ebb. All day he'd been shivering with cold, fearing the reappearance of the bronchial ailment which might once again confine him for a long spell in his miserable lodgings. The sky was overcast. The first cold wind of autumn was driving the rain in his face. Spear of Destiny, Trevor Ravenscroft's what I'm reading. His sketchbook had become sodden. It was a moment of painful self-knowledge. He saw with a stabbing clarity that all his grandiose architecture plans, into which he had thrown himself body and soul, were utterly worthless. Who would ever look at him? Suddenly, he saw himself a hopeless failure. He tore up his sketchbook in disgust, walked up the steps to the Schatzkammer, where he knew he would find warmth and shelter and the possibility to reassess his hopeless situation. Now, Adolf Hitler had been inside the Habsburg treasure house on many previous occasions. It was a Habsburg who made the excursion down to the south of France. Just thought I'd throw that in. And regarded all but a few of the exhibits as a load of meaningless junk. Not even the official crown of the Habsburg emperors was of German origin. The only insignia the Habsburgs could find when they became emperors to the Austro-Hungarian Empire was the ruby and sapphire crown of Bohemia, which the family had held since the 17th century. Yet the beautiful history-laden crown of the German emperor is the central piece, never found recognition in their eyes as a symbol of the Germanic people within their realm. How could one remain, Hitler said, and this is quoted right out of Mein Kampf, how could one remain a faithful subject of the House of Habsburg whose past and present policy was a betrayal of its German origins? We're still asking ourselves, what can explain the Bermuda Triangle? Now, I'm going to tell you going out the gate, it's never going to be explained without a biblical knowledge. It's never going to be explained without an understanding. What Paul made clear, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and wickedness in high places, that there is a war going on and we're the street fighters. But the real war is between God and Satan, warring. Satan to prevent God accomplishing his objective to bring forth people that he can trust to trust him. You know, what's been going on in this fight I've been having is not too far removed from what the heart of Christianity is. I wish you could find, Mike, a halfway point. It's too cold. There's got to be a point between those two extremes. What I've been driving at, what I have been demanding as pastor, is right at the heart of what God is looking for. You can't be perfect. You can be faithful. I wouldn't want a perfect wife. That'd drive me up the wall. I already know they're superior beings if they added that to their bag. This old boy better have a faithful one. If she don't want to be, I'll pay her a taxi fare. One way. Which is, by the way, why this pastor that's married to this church is a little upset at your philandering. You just return to the old pastor's bed at 11 o'clock every Sunday morning. Get out of those flop houses. There's a war going on. A war for the attention of man. A war where Satan wants you to trust him and distrust God. The war that began in the garden and has continued, and God is determined to fill the gap in heaven, the third that went out, with uncommon ones. Oh, he'll give them everything else. He'll give them righteousness, give them new life, give them eternal life, if they'll use their freedom right to trust him. But I'm trying to point out there are unexplainable things from the natural. That's where they're going. Now, the scientist says there ain't no such animal. We just got to dig deeper. In the Bermuda Triangle, swim deeper. Smartest thing that old boy did that got that crystal was swim out. The very sight of the gaudy regalia in the treasure house increased Hitler's aversion to the whole Habsburg dynasty. As a fervent German nationalist, Adolf Hitler... point is, I think Adolf Hitler was demon-possessed, just like the Antichrist will be. Don't anybody get the idea, because I'm reading this poor little old starving boy, I sympathize with the rat. Just hear me out. Too bad he didn't starve to death in Vienna. Adolf Hitler could never accept the Habsburgs' idea regarding the equality of all races. He felt a great and terrible loathing for the seething rabble of mixed races who swarmed into the treasure house in the summer months to gulp unthinkingly at the symbols of the decadent and tottering empire that stretched from the Rhine to the Dniester, from Saxony to Montenegro. Adolf Hitler stood in the central gangway, 19 years old, barely even aware of the crown, scepters, and jeweled ornaments all around him. So deeply was he locked in his own thoughts about the hopelessness of his own personal situation. He claims that he hardly even noticed an official party moving down the exhibits toward him, a group of foreign politicians on a conducted tour under the guidance of some expert from the museum archive. These foreigners, he says, quoting him, stopped almost immediately in front of where I was standing. Direct quote, out of Mein Kampf. This motley of Czechs, Hungarians, Serbs, Croats, and Jews, the promiscuous swarm of foreign people which had begun to batten down on the old nursery of German culture, he hated them. And he says, as he recites this in later years, these foreigners stopped almost immediately in front of where I was standing, while their guide pointed to an ancient spearhead. At first, I didn't even bother to listen to what this expert had to say about it. Here's a picture of it on the cover of the book. Wrapped in a sheet by later ones, it holds its two parts together. Patton got so mad that they couldn't explain all the markings on it. At first, I didn't bother to listen to what this expert had to say about it, this ancient spear, merely regarding the presence of the party as an intrusion into the privacy of my own despairing thoughts. And then I heard the words which were to change my whole life, Hitler said. I want to ask you, except for me, because I've been on this before, how many in this room, with all the history of as recent event as the Second World War, and to hear the horror of what Adolf Hitler brought on this world, how many of you ever were told this story? 1, 2, 3, 4. Apart from my telling you. 4. That's about the right percentage. Then I heard, he said, disinterested to this point, I heard the words which were to change my whole life, Hitler said. Quote, there is a legend associated with this spear that whoever claims it and solves its secrets holds the destiny of the world in his hands for good or evil. Awakened by inherent instincts of tyranny and conquest, Adolf Hitler now listened intently as the academic-looking guide explained that this legend of world historic destiny had arisen around the spear which a Roman centurion had thrust into the side of Jesus Christ at the crucifixion. There was, he said, only an unproven tradition that this was the particular spear in question. Apparently, it could be traced back as far as the German Emperor Otto the Great. The nail, secure within its blade, one of hundreds around the churches and museums of Europe, had not been added until the 13th century. Some of the German emperors of the Middle Ages has associated the legend with this very spear, but nobody had given credence to the legend anyway during the last 500 years or more, of course, except Napoleon, who had demanded it after the Battle of Austerlitz, before which it had been secretly smuggled out of Nuremberg and hidden in Vienna to keep it out of his tyrannical hands. The party moved on, while a fascinated Hitler walked a few paces closer to look at this object which apparently had so strange a legend. The solitary iron spearhead, black with age, rested on a faded red velvet dice with an open leather case. A long tapering point, am I boring you?
No, sir.
A long tapering point was supported by a wide base with metal flanges depicting the wings of a dove. Within a central aperture in the blade, a hammer-headed nail was secured by a cuff threaded with metal wire, and on the side of the lowest portion of the base, golden crosses were embossed. I knew with immediacy that this was an important moment in my life, said Adolf Hitler, when he later recounted his first sight of the spear. And yet I could not divine why an outwardly Christian symbol should make such an impression upon me. I stood there quietly gazing upon it for several minutes, quite oblivious to the scene of the Schatzkammer around me. It seemed to carry some hidden inner meaning which evaded me, a meaning which I felt inwardly, yet knew, yet could not, which I felt inwardly, knew, yet could not bring to consciousness. The words of Richard Wagner's Meistersinger ran through my mind. And still I don't succeed. I feel it, and yet I cannot understand it. I can't retain it nor forget it, and if I grasp it, I can't measure it. It was a verse I had formerly believed to be an expression of the one of others to understand me and the meaning of my destiny. a daily exhortation of never failing comfort in my darkest and most solitary hours. End of quote. Now this pale and sickly looking youth, who had so quickly forgotten his earlier mood of hopelessness and despair, felt these mystic lines summed up his own incapacity to understand the elusive message that this ancient talisman of power brought to him, and yet at the same time withheld from him. Quote again, "The spear appeared to be some sort of magical medium of revelation, for it brought the world of ideas into such close and living perspective that human imagination became more real than the world of sense. I felt as though I myself had held it in my hands before, in some earlier century of history, that I myself had once claimed it as my talisman of power." Now, not the only one, but one explanation of the moods and feelings, repeat now, not the only one, but one explanation of the moods and feelings of past lives that is used as empirical evidence for reincarnation is that there are demons without form seeking a body to inhabit, and any person demon-possessed will become aware of and feel the memory traces of the demon that's been around a long time and has occupied other vessels as the demons went from the demoniac boy of the Gadarenes into the body of pigs. I repeat, not the only source of those feelings, but one of them. Now, was Hitler demon-possessed at this point and beginning to feel impinging on his mind memory traces of the demon who had lived in other vessels and other lives? We'll see. "I felt as though I myself had held it in my hands before, in some earlier century of history, that I myself had once claimed it as my talisman of power and held the destiny of the world in my hands. Yet how could this be possible? What sort of madness was this that was invading my mind and creating such turmoil in my breast?" Adolf Hitler was still standing bewitched in front of this ancient weapon when the doors of the Veltlik Schatzkammer was closing and it was time to depart. Adolf Hitler knew his way around the shelves of the famous Hof Library as well as any university graduate, for he'd spent the better part of a year avidly studying in the warmth and the hush of its huge, well-appointed reading room. Books were his whole world. Kubizek, in his story, says, and quotes, "In Vienna, he used the Hof Library so industriously that I asked him once in all seriousness whether he intended to read the whole library, which, of course, earned some rude remarks." See, lots of historians have underestimated Adolf Hitler. You've got to be a stupid to think a man could do what he did and underestimate him. "One day, he took me along to the library and showed me, I don't like him, I don't admire anything about him. But don't even underestimate the devil. Don't overestimate him either if you've got faith that brings the power of God. One day he took me along to the library and showed me to the reading room, and I was almost overwhelmed with the enormous masses of books and asked him how it was he managed to get what he wanted. He began to explain to me the use of the various catalogs, which confused me even more," Kubizek said. The morning following his discovery of the Spear of Destiny, Adolf Hitler had not come to browse, as was his usual custom, through a random selection of books to give substance and support to precarious castles of dreams. On this occasion, he entered the reading room with measured tread and one single pointed intent.